三月初探索起秋难忘，长秋白日的大米卡苏吉大一真所一匹苏南吉周拉边之三月初寒暑。
I go for refuge in the time of night. To the Buddhas, the Dharma, and the assembly of saints, from the virtuous merits that I collect, by the practice of giving and the other perfections, may I attain the state of a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge in the time of night. To the Buddhas, the Dharma, and the assembly of saints, from the virtuous merits that I collect, by the practice of giving and the other perfections, may I attain the state of a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. May all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all beings be free from suffering and causes of suffering. May all beings never be separated from the bliss which is sorrowless. May all dwell in equanimity, free from aversion and clinging. The ground is covered with flowers and sprinkled with scented water. In the middle is Mount Meru, surrounded by the four continents and ornamented by the sun and the moon. By visualizing all this and offering it as a Buddha realm, may all sentient beings partake of the Buddha's pure lands. Om Guru Buddha Bodhisattva Saparivara Ratnamandala Buddha Mega Samudra Saparana Samayaya. Okay, welcome. So we are studying The Beautiful Ornament of the Three Visions by Nordchen Khunchuk Lundro. Just very quickly to review where we've come from and where we're going. We've covered the impure vision. I don't know if you can see this. We've covered the impure vision. We are in the vision of experience, and we've gone through the relative bodhicitta, and we're working our way through ultimate enlightenment thought. What it is, how to produce it, how to practice, the meditation, how to do calm abiding meditation, how to do insight, wisdom, meditation. And tonight we're at the last one over there, how to mix those. Mm. Okay, so that's a very quick summary of the last 5 months. So in our text, we are on page 195, I believe. The merging or the mixing of calm abiding and insight wisdom. Everybody see that? About two-thirds of the way down there? C?
Oh, okay. Yes.
Okay. So, this is a very important section, obviously. So mixing together, distilling of all thoughts, in which there is no mental activity whatsoever at the time of calm abiding, and the destruction of all imputations by perfect wisdom, in which no objects of mental activity whatsoever are found at the time of insight wisdom, into the one taste of the practice of meditating nothing whatsoever, is the practice of the merging of calm abiding and insight wisdom. The next little quotation is from our friend Maitreya, who's the coming Buddha, and it says, "This path of merging together should be understood to be a vow." Now, this is why we have commentaries on these texts, because that's not obviously evident. So does anybody want to take a guess at what that might mean? It's a little bit cryptic.
Well, there's one thing to still your mind, and it's another thing to... I had a friend, I try to make this a short story. I had a friend who was very much into the scientific view of our existence. And he thought this whole Buddhism thing was nonsense, etc., etc., or just a bunch of chemicals. I says, okay, the day they fired you from being the head fencing instructor in your club, what number of chemicals was it that caused you such suffering? In other words, it's one thing to say, okay, we're all chemical. Well, that's could be somewhat self-evident, but the pain, in other words. So, in a sense, he brought himself to calmness because it's all just, you know, the universe, empty, whatever, science. But how do you deal with the suffering of things not going your way, you know? And essentially, so a lot of people in Buddhism can do the same thing. I mean, they can spend hours and hours a day meditating, and at the same, but then suddenly be hit with, you know, someone dying, or your meditation master having an affair. Well, then the whole thing all disappears, you know. So you have to all along not just do one and then do the other, but in fact see one in provoking the other. Shall we say, what are you going to do with this calmness when the wave hits, and how do you gather it together in the midst of a hurricane? Because it's not calmness unless it's always calmness, you know. So I'll leave it at that.
Okay. So, what is this vow part of this about? Anybody have an idea?
Well, a vow is a commitment.
Okay. That's what the normal meaning is, and that's what one would think. But when I read it, I went, well, what does that have to do with what we're talking about?
Yeah, that's my question, too.
Because if you don't vow under any circumstances to bring your calmness into the hurricane, you're not going to do it. Mm. So it has to be a vow that it just does you hang on to your life raft. You bow to hang on to your life raft. You can't just say, well, I'll just let go and see what happens. I'll be one with the wind.
Okay, well, we don't have the Sanskrit here, and I don't speak Sanskrit anyway. So my question is, you know, how did this get translated into the word vow? So I did what I always do. I asked Lama. So we had a long discussion about this, but the bottom line is, he said what this really means is that this merging is what you need to do. You need to practice this. So maybe put aside the word vow, because that kind of takes us down another road, but in terms of our practice, there is no other way to get enlightened except this merging. This is the Mahayana path to enlightenment, okay? From the Mahayana point of view, this is it. And in fact, a little later in the text, it'll say that.
So, in other words, it's the commitment and the understanding that the path is the result.
Yeah, I wouldn't even use the word commitment personally, because, again, that's that vow kind of take on it. And it isn't, the point here is not to make a vow. The point here is to do the practice. But the point here is, if you're going to do the practice, you have to do this mixing, this merging. Otherwise, you end up, remember when we said there's the three realms? The desire realm,
form realm,
and the formless realm. We're in the desire realm, because we have desire, obviously. And how do you get in those other two realms? What's the karmic action that propels you up there, those two places? It was in the text.
Your meditation?
Yeah. What about it? Remember the bird?
The bird with the two wings.
Yeah.
Wisdom and compassion.
Yeah, and so?
So you're developing wisdom and compassion.
So how do you end up? Do we want to go to the form realm or the formless realm?
No.
So that's like a detour. You drove your car in the ditch. So what causes you to do that?
Only having one wing.
Yeah, only having one wing and having a meditation that isn't balanced.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's the karmic cause that we want to avoid. So here, they're kind of, in a obscure sort of way, they're mentioning that. So it's not so much about taking a vow and following your word or your vow. It's about having a balanced practice.
And it would be like, the other part of that way would be insight, wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I think you're getting behind the point. The vow is the most important word in that sentence. The fact is if you don't make a vow, you're not going to do it, because that's the nature of ego.
He's saying it's not a vow. That's not the word.
Oh. Well, what's that?
It's a practice.
It's a vow. Vow is meaning you know that you have to vow to do this because it's a difficult thing to do.
Okay.
It's not a difficult thing to do?
No, I think you're right.
Maybe
I think
it's just me?
No. You're totally right. I think we all agree with you. I think what we're saying is, like, there's two parts to the story, A and B, and you can't just do one. You have to do both, and you have to do A and B, because otherwise you end up
otherwise,
in these other states. Like, if you just meditate and you forget the insight wisdom, then you're missing half of the equation. You have to use A and B to make enlightenment. And that's
why
what
you use
on.
The word vow is that there will be a predisposition to be one wing or the other.
Right, okay.
So there's a one wing, like for instance, you have to vow to be, if you're going to have a democracy, you have to have a right wing and a left wing. You have to vow
to do both.
Practice the merging together. Practicing the merging together.
You have to vow to practice the merging together, because Boeing is not going to do it for you. It's not going to give you both wings.
Yeah.
So it's an actual vow to do so, because nobody's going to do it for you.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
What you get for asking, Michael.
Sorry?
That's what you get for asking. Just told us.
Well, I asked myself, when I read this, I went, what is this?
And then you went and asked Lama.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You could have just
so
told
you can,
us.
So you can follow whoever you want. Okay, so actually Lama went into a lot more detail, but we're not going to do that tonight because we don't have time. Okay, so most of the methods to practice this are the same as described above. However, here, one may proceed as follows. Without being parted from the wisdom which understands that all these three, the object to be meditated upon, the method of meditation, and the meditator, do not exist in their own nature, clearly and distinctly settle oneself in the manner of the non-differentiation of the essence of these two. Number one, the calm abiding, which effortlessly remains one pointedly upon the aspect of the appearance of the clarity and non-cessation of consciousness. And two, the insight wisdom, which superbly realizes the non-origination of mere appearances. And if that placement is very stable, then sharpen the wisdom of discrimination. If the mind does not remain stable due to excessive searching, then relax the mind. So this is kind of a summary of the two wings, but also there's a little reminder about the practice of calm abiding and the antidotes. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
So if the mind is not stable and does excessive searching, what's another word for that?
Scattering.
Mm-hmm. Scattering. That's one of our faults, yeah? Scattering. Mm-hmm. What's the opposite of scattering?
Sinking,
yeah? So if you do that, you get into a scattered frame of mind, you relax. You're holding too tight, your mind rebels. Try to stop your thoughts and see what happens.
Yeah.
They get worse, right?
Yeah.
You're tight, if you're too tight. Mm. So you get in, and how do we know if it gets too tight?
You start scattering? Is that what you're...
Yeah, how do we know if you're scattered?
Because you can't
focus.
You're not focused on the object of meditation anymore, and you're just getting lost in your thoughts?
Mm-hmm.
Is that why you make a vow?
Oh, come on. Leave it alone.
But how do you know that, is the question.
By watching your mind.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You have watchfulness.
Mm-hmm.
Remember we talked about the watcher, the watchfulness?
Mm-hmm.
Is that the same as mindfulness, though?
We don't use that word in this class.
Oh, okay.
Because it's been corrupted by society.
Oh, well, that's true.
And it creates massive confusion in people's minds and discussions.
Okay.
So we use memory and awareness, or memory and watchfulness.
Okay.
Okay. So the watchfulness part of it, the memory is you're remembering how to meditate, you know, how you do it.
Mm.
And the watchfulness is to see that you're actually doing it. And while you're watching, you're not watching, like, you know, intensely. You're watching kind of respectfully from a distance, but you're watching. And when you see the scattering, which is what's referenced here, then you relax, because you're, if you're trying too hard, you'll stress your mind and it'll run on you. Mm. Yeah. It's like squeezing something, it's resisting.
An egg.
Hmm?
Like squeezing an egg?
Squeezing an egg, yeah.
Just go running.
I'm going to write that down. Squeezing an egg.
That's like, oh.
Okay, so is that clear what we're talking about here? Okay. And then it says, through placing the mind in this way in many short periods with short intervals in between. Lama said 5 minutes when you're doing this. 5 minutes, and then a very short break, and then do it again for another 5 minutes. 5 minutes maximum. Okay. What happens if you do it for a long time? Probably. Usually.
Sluggish.
Yeah, this is a very, very advanced meditation we're talking about here. This is at the height of the Sutrayana up towards Vajrayana. Okay, so this is advanced stuff, and it's very intensive, and you need to learn how to do it correctly. Remember I had a saying to describe doing it correctly? Does anybody remember that? Is it practice makes perfect? Is it true that practice makes perfect, Sonia?
I don't think so.
What makes perfect?
Just being in the nature of your mind.
Yeah. Perfect practice makes perfect.
Perfect practice.
In other words, if you're doing it wrong, you're just making a bad habit, which you will have to try to unwind later, which is, we all know is not always easy. So the short periods of meditation allow you to keep your practice, you know, within the guardrails of where it should be, and then you take a very short break, and then you do it again. Mm. And you do that a lot, and that's the way this kind of meditation should be done. I'm not saying all meditation should be 5 minutes, I'm not saying that.
Mm-hmm.
But this is very intensive practice that needs to be done correctly, because what happens if you don't do it correctly?
Then you're not doing it. You're
where are you going to go? To the form realm or the formless realm. And how long are you going to be there?
Eons.
Eons and eons. And then what's going to happen?
Then you go to hell?
Yeah.
Well, then you're going to have your next karma, which there's nowhere to go but down. Because when you're in the form realm, the formless realm, you're not creating merit. You're chilling in your bliss.
Uh-huh.
That's why this is framed this way, to do it short and do it well. Because nobody wants to go off, you know, nobody wants to drive their car in the ditch, right? So
each session, do you have to do your prayers? And
no.
Do you just do that once and then?
Yes, you do your refuge and all that in the beginning, your motivation in the beginning. Then you do your practices. And then when you're done, you do your dedication. You don't have to do every 5 minutes. You don't have to do refuge, no.
Okay.
And that's also true if you're doing other kinds of practices, too. A lot of times people do different practices together. You can do your refuge in the beginning. You do your practices, whatever they are, and then you can do your dedication at the end. That's a good question, yeah. Okay, so that's what this is talking about. And it says, through placing the mind in this way in many short periods with short intervals in between, one will accomplish this merging meditation and we'll be free from deviating from the path. Deviating from the path is what we were talking about. If one fails to understand these essential points, then no matter how firm one's calm abiding practice may be, it will still be within one of the four worldly meditative states. The four worldly meditative states are the divisions of the form realm. So there, it doesn't say form realm, but that's what it's referring to. So they're just saying here what I just said. And no matter how good one's realization of insight wisdom may be, it will deviate into one of the four formless realms. So there it is right there. If you don't have the two wings of the bird, you'll end up in one of these realms. Therefore, it's very important to cut off all deviant transit absorptions and practice correctly. And even between meditative sessions, one should not let the consciousness of the sense organs be widely diffused into their respective objects, And one should understand that all appearances are not beyond the sphere of reality, that is, the Dharma Dhatu, and so are merely projections of mind. Within that state of mind, one should work for the welfare of sentient beings as much as one is able. Okay, so you have your meditative sessions, you're sitting on your cushion, you're doing your practice, and then you have your life to live, so you get up off your cushion and you go out and you live your life. But it doesn't stop there. And it says, between sessions, you should not let the consciousness of the sense organs be widely diffused into their respective objects. What do you think that means?
Like, not to believe it's in front of you to be real.
Okay, don't believe it's solidly real. And what else?
Attach yourself to it.
Yeah, don't be attached. And what about this word, widely diffused? What does that refer to? Mm-hmm. What do we do when we have our sense, your eyes, your ears, and so on, okay? And what do we do when we see something interesting, something sparkly, something shiny,
we become distracted by what we see, by what we hear, by what we feel, and then we get caught up in all the clashes of our own desires again.
Yeah, not only distracted, but...
consumed?
We live in the desire realm, remember? Mm-hmm. And what do? In the desire realm.
We
desire stuff. And not necessarily with our hands, but with our sense consciousnesses. Our consciousnesses go out. Mm-hmm. And, that's a pretty picture. That's a nice looking person. That's a nice smell. That's a nice color. And we do this. We do this all the time, really, without realizing it. Mm-hmm. So they're kind of saying, listen, you just spent all this effort and energy meditating to break down this illusion that we've created. Don't forget your meditation when you're out running around in the world. Don't let your sense be drawn and mindlessly follow them.
I was just wondering, like, would it be ideal then to surround yourself with things that are not so desirable to you so that you're kind of practicing...
But then you won't be challenged. No.
Yeah. Well,
I know,
okay,
I
fine.
Know.
Fair enough.
Maybe.
Good point.
Yeah, still have to live in the world, right?
Yeah, but...
it's all a practice.
But
basically, this is saying is it's always a practice.
Right.
No matter where you are, what you're doing, and who you're with, it's always a practice.
Just think of everything around you as a stage set. Mm-hmm. The actor doesn't get attached to the stage set at all. You just walk on the set. You play a particular role. In this case, you're playing the role of the meditator. Keep your mind on that. Mm-hmm. You're safe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a stage set or a dream, mm-hmm. a movie, a magician's illusion. There are all these examples that are used to help us kind of break down our solid reality. And we mentioned this last time, you see reflections in the window. Like, I'm not sitting out on the deck, even though it looks like it.
Right.
But if you can recognize that and go through your day recognizing all this illusory stuff that we're surrounded with anyway, it breaks down your solid attachment that the world is solid and it's this way and no other way. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't mean you can't surround yourself with beautiful things. Golly gee, I hope not.
Yeah. Really, yeah.
But it's up to you what you want to do. But you recognize that it's an illusory, beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's not independently existing beautiful thing.
Okay.
Right? Gotcha. You agree, Stephen? Okay. Okay, so up to this point, the instructions that are common to the path of the bodhisattvas have been explained. We finished merging, the topic of merging. We've gone through all this. Isn't that amazing?
Mm-hmm.
And now, what are we going to do? We're going to foreshadow the next vision. What's the next vision?
The pure vision.
The pure vision, yeah. So we're getting very close, and then we're going to get some hints to pique our interest. And so the title is Meditate with Unshakable Understanding that an Extraordinary Experience in the Vajrayana Path Will Arise. So extraordinary experience is a term we haven't used before, but it's being added here, because the experiences that are coming truly are extraordinary. This term Vajrayana, I wrote a chart with terminology because this can get really confusing sometimes. Not only for beginners, but for people who, you know, have been around a while, these terms, we've got Sanskrit, we've got Tibetan, we've got English, and they're not always used consistently is the problem. Without going into this in great detail, because this is actually done for the next course, but it's relevant now, which is why I put it up. When we say Vajrayana, I'm using the English terminology diamond path for that. I'm trying to get as much as possible into English, even if it isn't perfect English or perfect terminology. Sanskrit, I don't know if any of you are fluent in Sanskrit, but I'm not. So when we say Vajrayana, we're talking about the diamond path. It's sometimes referred to as Mantrayana. Yana means vehicle or path. No, vehicle.
Vehicle.
Yeah. And it's sometimes referred to as the resultant path. These are all synonyms. Okay. These are the esoteric branch, so to speak, of the teachings. Over here, the path of perfections, which is the Sutrayana, which is called the causal path, is the exoteric branch of the teachings. I'm going to talk about this a little more later when we get in the text. When they're talking about Vajrayana here, they're really talking about the pure vision. And so they're sort of, you know, hinting at it here, calling it the extraordinary experience. Because we're in the vision of experience section of the text. By the way, vision of experience, it isn't necessarily vision. It's not necessarily vision with your eyes. It's perception with all of your sense organs. Mm-hmm. Just to make a fine point there. Okay, mm-hmm. If you don't like the word vision or you don't visualize, mm-hmm. which I didn't used to. Okay. So the language and the synonyms and the terminology sometimes can be a little bit confusing, but you're welcome to take a picture of that if you want to keep it. So we're going to talk about that here.
Couldn't the Vajrayana be the Tantra? Or is that different?
Okay, you have Hindu Tantras, and you have Buddhist Tantras. Those are different. In Buddhism, the Tantras refers to the books.
Okay.
It doesn't refer to the path. The path is the Vajrayana.
Okay.
The Tantras are the books.
Okay.
But that's not true in Hinduism. So that's another thing that confuses us,
okay.
is the word Tantra. And also in the West, it has this other meaning, which isn't relevant here.
Exactly. Okay.
Thanks for bringing that up, actually. Okay, is that clear as mud?
I can't. Once again, we find ourselves at loggerheads. Tantra is in fact, in some, there may be some lineages that see the Tantras as books or written, but the living Tantra is sort of really, or the living mantra, the living word, the actual diamond vehicle itself. That's how I've heard it said, but other lineages have different things. If you're from another lineage, it may not have been used that way. So I'll just leave it at that.
Okay.
But the thing is that when you talk about a vow, for instance, it is the vow to see the diamond vehicle in every situation. For instance, if you face a world that is so beautifully, scientifically espoused in those books, there is a way of understanding their idea of, well, Tantra means continuity in the Kagyu lineage, for instance. And that continuity means that you can relate to every scientist or every, you know, fundamentalist in their view of that awakened mind, which is found in everyone. So that's another way of seeing Tantra, and I'm not sure if that fits with what you're saying. But it's...
I'm not sure either.
Mm. Yeah.
Because we don't use the term that way, so...
Yeah, fine.
All right.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Okay. So, the extraordinary path is applied to the root treatise in the following manner. What is the root treatise?
That's Virupa.
Virupa's, what's it called? Virupa's the author.
That's Sutra.
Not Sutra. Okay, that's your homework. Look up the title to the treatise,
okay.
The Virupa's treatise, which this is based on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's in the beginning of the book, right?
Mm-hmm. It's called the Root Treatise of the Vajra Verses.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's what it's referring to. So it's applied to the extraordinary path that we're talking about here is applied to the Root Treatise in the following manner. For the extraordinary practitioner with the extraordinary transic absorption is the vision of the extraordinary experience. The extraordinary practitioner is the practitioner of the Vajrayana path, which will be discussed later in the beautiful ornament of the three tantras. So this text has a companion text, the beautiful ornament of the three tantras, which is esoteric.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, Nörtchen Khunchak Lundrup wrote a whole series of texts called the beautiful ornament of so and so and so and so.
Mm-hmm.
And so these are two of the series that he wrote.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll be discussed later, but not in this text. You see how they're leading you into the Vajrayana? The extraordinary transic absorption is the Vajrayana path of the ripening empowerment and the liberating special instructions, along with its accompanying teachings, which will be discussed later. The vision of extraordinary experience will then arise through relying upon these two, that is, the empowerment and the special instructions. So again, this is all referencing Vajrayana, which can only be practiced having received the empowerment for the practice and the instructions on how to do the practice. It's not like Sutrayana, it's esoteric, okay? There are books, but they're restricted. So that's what that's referring to.
You've heard of pointing out instructions?
Mm-hmm.
And the pointing out instructions, how would that relate to Tantra as the way you see it? Because I'm kind of missing something.
Pointing out instructions are—that's a term that's used in other lineages, like Kargyus.
Mm-hmm.
Sakyus don't use that terminology, and in any case, it's esoteric and can't be discussed.
Oh, okay.
And so, some parts of the Tantra, as we learn it in our lineage, just because I want you to know that there's a whole other way of seeing Tantra. And
I get that.
Yeah.
I think so, we all got that, James.
I never got a Tantra that was in a book, so
okay.
I'm lost too. I fully admit that. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying I'm lost, and I want to build some sort of bridge from my knowledge to yours.
Okay.
Which I think would be a way of seeing Tantra.
Okay. Though to describe this in detail is inconceivable, in brief, there are three paths. The path of dispelling obstacles to enter into the path of destroying attachment, and the path of great enlightenment. There are also three experiences, the experience of body, the experience of mind, and the experience of dream. There are three heat realizations, the heat realization that is preceded by the conceptualization, the heat realization that gathers the nine elements, and the heat realization that burns the seed element. The three interdependent arisings, the interdependent arising of the reversal of vital errors, the interdependent arising of visionary experiences, and the interdependent arising of dreams. The three transic absorptions, the transic absorption of various characteristics, the transic absorption of being empty of own nature, and the transic absorption of the co-emergence of essence. Furthermore, these 15 may be subsumed into one transic absorption alone, and the terminology for that is meditative equipoise. Again, these are just titles that don't mean much to us here, but it's giving you, it's sort of whetting your appetite, so to speak, to lead you into Vajrayana. And these are the various just descriptions of it, I guess you would say. For example, the experience of the dream, there are, within our bodies, there are 100 deities that live in our bodies. They're the wrathful and the peaceful deities. And when you get into these very advanced meditations, you have the experience of seeing these deities, and then you're able to make offerings to them, and you're able to receive blessings from them. So this is just to give you an example of kind of some of the experiences that follow later when you get into really advanced practices in the Vajrayana path. The manner of meditating unshakable understanding for this is described by Jetsun Rinpoche Drapa Gyaltsen. Who was Jetsun Rinpoche Drapa Gyaltsen?
He was one of the two brothers with Sonam Tsemo, who were sons of one of the early Sakya masters.
Yeah, Sachin Kungan Ningpo.
Yes, Sachin.
Actually, there were four brothers, but he and Sonam Tsemo are more famous because they are in the group of five founders. So there's Sachin Kungan Ningpo, who's in that tanka there, and we don't have a Drapa Gyaltsen tanka. Drapa Gyaltsen is an interesting historical figure because he was a lay person, and he was a vegetarian in Tibet. So I really like him.
Yeah, me too.
He was an emanation of Manjushri. So when we say Jetsun Rinpoche, Rinpoche means precious one. Those are titles, but his name was Drapa Gyaltsen. Sometimes it's written differently because Tibet has various accents, so you might see different forms of that name, but that's his name. Anyway, what he said is, between the sessions of meditating upon the two enlightenment thoughts, one should be diligent in reciting sutras and making offerings to the Triple Gem. So why do you think he said that? I thought we were talking about high meditation states and stuff like that.
We have to produce merit to get hold of.
Yeah, those are merit-producing activities, mm-hmm. right? And why do we need to produce merit?
To arrive at wisdom.
To what?
To have a way into wisdom.
Yeah, to accomplish wisdom. There's no way to accomplish wisdom
without
generating a lot of merit. So during your meditative sessions, you do what's instructed here, but when you're between sessions... And he just gives the example of reciting sutras and making offerings. But of course, as we know, there's a long, 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 long list of meritorious activities that can be done. But you don't forget that. Just because you're a highfalutin meditator doesn't mean you stop practicing the other five perfections.
Exactly.
Yeah, so that's what this refers to. Mm. He's just giving two examples for us.
Mm.
As this verse states, if one has purified one's mind stream by the common path and gains a slight experience of the two aspects of the enlightenment thought and the like, then leading the mind by great compassion, one should think, even if it takes three incalculable eons to gain complete Buddhahood for the sake of sentient beings, this is really not very long. Moreover, it is possible that the Tathagata, who is skilled in means and endowed with great compassion, might have also taught some other method by which one can gain complete enlightenment quickly. The three incalculable eons, what does that refer to?
Well, Buddha himself took three eons, right? And when we think about the proof that he needed in front of who was challenging him on that. And the spirit of the earth stood up, right, and said, yes, he has done three incalculable eons. I am the witness. So that's how long it took Buddha to gain enlightenment.
Okay. And what about us?
Well, it will take us to at least that
long. No, not necessarily.
No.
Maybe.
Okay.
Right?
So which path, maybe. Which of these... paths takes three countless eons.
Right there.
Is Sutrayana or
this one?
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you
this one may not.
So if you're on the path of perfections, it takes three countless eons. Okay? And there's divisions about what happens in each eon and so forth. So that's what the three countless eons or incalculable eons refers to. But then it says, it is possible that the Tathagata, who is skilled in means and endowed with great compassion, mm-hmm. might have also taught some other method mm-hmm. by which one can gain complete enlightenment quickly. Mm-hmm. So what path would that be?
The Vajra.
The Vajra.
Yeah.
The diamond path.
Yeah. So again, it's foreshadowing what's coming, which is the diamond path. And the teachings say that that takes between 1 and 16 lifetimes, depending on your skill,
wow.
how skillful you are.
That's exciting.
Which is a lot quicker than three countless eons.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, fundamentally speaking, that's the real advantage. It's not the only advantage, but it's the real advantage over taking this path is it's faster. And why do we care? I mean, if we get there anyway, who cares?
Because what's at stake is helping sentient
beings.
Yeah.
Yes.
Your mother's waiting.
Your mother's waiting. Well, then what about the
She's
Mahayana?
Suffering. What about
then,
it?
Then
Mantrayana.
Oh, no, there's the Mahayana, right?
Oh.
There's Sutrayana, Mahayana, and Vajrayana. So how long does it take in the Mahayana? We never touched that part.
Yes, and it's coming. It's coming. I'm.
Okay.
I promise you we'll get to that this evening.
Okay.
Okay, question.
It's coming on this page.
Oh, okay. Good.
Can you wait?
Yes.
Okay.
It just wasn't. I just didn't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It seemed to me the way you have it, these are subdivisions of the Mahayana. Is that incorrect?
That is correct.
Oh, okay. So... Okay.
Yeah, well, we're going to talk about
this page.
Hold
okay.
on. Okay. So they're kind of teasing us a little bit here, I think, when he says, well, maybe the Tathagata had another idea for a faster way. Yeah, maybe he did. He did.
Okay.
So if one has repeatedly read, understood, contemplated, and looked up points in the precious collection of sutras, yeah. One will have seen the sutra known as, and I can't pronounce that, so we don't have the English for it, but what it says is, although it is certain that all the three vehicles which lead to liberation were taught by the Lord Buddha, why didn't you teach a sure path that practices the cause and the result spontaneously and does not search for the Buddha elsewhere? The Buddha answered this question, having turned the wheel of the cause dharma, for anyone who desires that cause, in the future, the short path of the Vajrayana will arise. It's certain that all three vehicles lead to liberation. What are the three vehicles they're talking about here?
Well, the ones was known as the Theravada, and the Mahayana, and finally the Vajrayana.
Okay, close, but we're into terminology here, and that's what we're going to sort out on this page,
okay.
is the terminology, and that's why I wrote all this out, because
right.
it's confusing.
Yeah.
Okay, Theravada, I've tried to, not that I personally translated this, but I've tried to choose translations of English that approximate what we're talking about here. So what's referred to as Theravada, or what used to be called Hinayana, I've chosen foundation path because I think it's the best description for what we're talking about here, that these paths are not horizontal, they're vertical. So these are the three paths, the foundation path, the path of perfections, and the diamond path. Those are the English terminology for all these Sanskrit words, okay?
Mm.
And it's important that we understand this because these top two, every path builds on the one below it.
Mm.
You don't skip these and go to the diamond path. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
You have to have the foundation path.
Mm.
You have to have morality. You have to have refuge. Okay? And then, if you want to go to the path of perfection, you don't throw this away. You still keep your morality.
Mm.
You don't get to just, you know, throw that out the window. It doesn't work. And the same way, if you want to go to the Vajrayana or the diamond path, you don't throw out the path of perfections. What is the path of perfection? So we talked about that. How do you do that? How do you practice it?
Do you have Lojong slogans and the six like the generosity, devotion,
the six perfections.
Depending on what book you read and when you read it.
Yeah.
Right. So that those six anyway, and that's the path of perfection.
The six perfections.
That's part of the path of perfection.
Yes, obviously.
What about bodhicitta?
The six perfections are part of the path of perfection. What else is
on
that path?
Bodhicitta.
Well, that's bodhicitta, hopefully.
That's the motivation. Yeah. We're talking about the nuts and bolts of how do you do it.
Okay.
Besides the six perfections, what else did we talk about? Is your cup cracked or is it solid?
Right. Exactly. Foundations of mindfulness?
The four.
There are four.
Okay, your homework tonight will be... No. The four means for attracting disciples. That's the other nuts and bolts method that we studied in this text along with the six perfections.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So if you're on the diamond path, you don't throw those out. You don't stop doing generosity, morality, patience. You still have to be generous and patient, okay? You still have to do the practices. So I wrote it this way rather than horizontally to show that they build, but they don't delete the one underneath them. They build on it, okay? Those are the three vehicles that's referenced here in this sutra, and they all lead to liberation, which is not the same as enlightenment. And they were all taught by the Buddha. That's why we don't want to put down the other paths. They're valid paths taught by the Buddha. It's just that there's different propensities in people.
But to continue with your point, the Buddha starts with laying a foundation and builds upon it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you can't look at history from the modern period. You have to go back to the beginning.
Go to university until you've done primary school.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah.
There
and
it
you
is.
Don't lose that knowledge just because you get to university.
Exactly.
It all accumulates and
sometimes.
Takes you there.
Sometimes you do.
No, but I mean it takes you there, right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
So in the sutras, there actually somebody, I don't know who, is actually asking, you know, well, although it's certain these all lead to liberation, why didn't you teach a sure path that practices the cause and result spontaneously and does not search for the Buddha elsewhere? And the Buddha answered. He said, well, having turned the wheel of the cause dharma, the causal path.
Part of the foundation path is the causal?
No.
Knowing what?
No.
So the causal path, that is that there's suffering.
No, don't confuse the causal path with the foundation path. The causal path is the path of perfection.
Okay.
And then Vajrayana is the resultant. We're getting there.
Yeah, yeah.
We still got three more lines.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, patience is a virtue, right? Okay.
Yeah.
The Buddha answered, he said, well, having turned the wheel of the cause dharma, for anyone who desires that cause in the future, the short path of the Vajrayana will arise. So short, we already talked about that, it's quicker.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't take three countless eons, it takes 1 to 16 lifetimes, so it's shorter, quicker, time-wise. When he says in the future, it isn't just in the future time-wise, but the disciple that's hearing the teaching on the path has to have enough merit. So, Buddha didn't teach Vajrayana to everybody. He only taught it to the disciples that had enough merit to receive it and practice it. And that's one of the reasons that some of the people on this path don't recognize this path.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't there.
They're still working their way.
Yeah. And also, in the Lankavatara Sutra, it states, the holder of the mantra who wishes to propitiate the mantra should not eat any meat since it obstructs accomplishing the mantra and the attainment of liberation. Now, we don't have time to do the meat debate tonight.
Yeah, I know.
I'm sorry,
that
folks.
That one goes on forever.
That takes about 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So we're not going to talk about meat, but the point I want to make, you've had that talk, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I just want, again, we're talking terms here, terminology.
Yeah.
The holder of the mantra refers to the mantrayana, not mantra on your mala. Although in mantrayana you use your mala and say mantras. The diamond path is sometimes called the mantrayana, which just to confuse us even more.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they're talking about here. The holder of the mantra means somebody who had one of these vajrayana empowerments that was referred to on the previous page and received the instructions and does the practice. So then you hold the mantra, you hold the practice, you're empowered to practice it and you can use it. That's what it means when it says the holder of the mantra who wishes to propitiate the mantra. Okay. Accomplishing the mantra in the obtainment of liberation. So, okay. When one sees the words of these and other sutras, one understands that there is a path known as the collection of discourses of the holders of the mantra or Vajrayana. This is also called the result vehicle, and more extraordinary than the common perfection vehicle or cause vehicle, the Mahayana path. Now, we've gotten there.
Oh, okay.
This is where the confusion has been perpetrated, in my opinion, by mixing up these terms. This term, the Mahayana path, really refers to both of these. But unfortunately, in usage, and here's an example of usage which is confusing, where it's actually referring to Sutrayana as the Mahayana path. But that's misleading.
Yeah, yeah.
So make sure you don't confuse these, even though they've confused it in the text. And you will hear it confused a lot in talks, in Dharma talks. It's done all the time. So you need to sort of translate that in your mind if you're wanting to get it clear, because the causal vehicle is definitely the Sutrayana. It's not the Vajrayana.
Mm-hmm.
Is that clear as mud?
No,
it's clear. It's very clear.
Okay.
And they're both Mahayana.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Including
Mahayana.
Except for the foundation path.
Foundation path is
not
Mahayana.
Mahayana.
Okay,
that's
right.
Okay.
Actually, the term I've heard is Shravakayana. I don't know if all lineages use that term. You know, Shravakayana, Mahayana, Vajrayana.
Yes, it is used, and it is also slightly inaccurate.
Okay.
Because there are two subdivisions. Oh, actually, there's many, many, many subdivisions, but there are two main subdivisions of the foundation path, one of which is Shravakayana.
Oh, okay.
The other one is Prajekabuddhayana.
Oh, right.
And
yeah, exactly.
But that's a lot of words and syllables to say.
Okay.
So to shorten it, people just say Shravakayana or Shravaka or disciples, or there's all these terms
or
that are Theravada used.
Maybe.
That's one of the many. Mm-hmm. I think we talked about this one night and we decided there were how many, Stephen? 24 sub-schools or something like that?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And there's only like a couple that still exist.
Oh, okay.
But all of these can be divided even more, but we won't get into that.
Right, okay.
So that's another kind of thing that's good to know so you don't get confused about, well, what are they talking about here?
Mm-hmm.
Shravakayana is translated into English as the hearers.
Oh, okay.
And the Prajekabuddhayana is translated as the solitary realizers.
Oh, okay.
Or the rhinoceros Buddhas.
Oh, rhinoceros.
Because apparently rhinoceros like to hang out alone a lot.
Oh, great.
They say, I don't know. I never knew one.
Right.
Yeah. The trouble with all of this is that every one of those elements can be found in each and every school of Buddhism. The ones that hang out alone, well, that's found in the yogic tradition. Those like the causal path is like the turning of the wheel, and that's all in the Theravadin / whatever else you want to call that. And it all goes through. But the other is, it's more of a matter of emphasis. You know, the causal path is more or less this you know, a vision or a view of the world, which transcends something that you, Theravada, never mind it all.
Wait,
it's all
wait,
the same.
You can't just leave it hanging.
Well, no, all of these are elements, but it's just different focuses. You know, for instance, the devotion, you'll find the devotion to the teacher in both the foundation path and in the Mahayana path. Like, for instance, Zen has a tremendous devotion to the Zen master that enlightens you. So that'll be, that's also found, of course, in the Theravadin, because if you look through the sutras, you'll see all these moments when it's the, by the devotion of the Buddha, everything's broken up. It just goes on and on and on like that. But the focus is mainly the words of the Buddha in the foundation path. The causal path is, you know, Mantrayana, like free all sentient beings.
No, wait. Causal path is not Mantrayana.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry. Sorry. The causal path is freeing all sentient beings, and the dhammic path is also freeing all sentient beings, but really fast.
Oh, dear.
Okay.
So what you're saying is there's, like, similarities within each one, but they're slightly different. With
focuses.
Small focuses.
Well,
okay.
It all teaches the same thing, but they have different emphases.
Okay.
Yeah. Emphasis.
Mm.
That's better. Emphasis than focus.
Okay. That helps.
Mm-hmm.
But that is good. Is,
okay.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for doing that.
Okay. Having understood this, one produces the desire to search for and practice the Vajrayana path. So again, the text is leading us in that direction. Thus one should think. Since I have achieved understanding and experience of the enlightenment thought just by practicing the path of the perfections, having met this path of the Vajrayana, which experiences the cause and result spontaneously, I should practice it. I would certainly gain inconceivable transient absorptions and experiences of the path. At that time, I should recognize whatever good or bad experiences that arise, and with neither hope, nor doubt, nor acceptance and rejection, I should be indifferent to all those experiences. So I should think of them in this way. Would somebody like to read the next paragraph for us? You want to read?
Sure. Here, at the time of the preliminary stage, the need to meditate on unshakable understanding for the experience that will arise in the Vajrayana path is as follows. When one later practices the path of Vajrayana, agreeable experiences will arise, such as visions of the Buddhas and the like, and disagreeable experiences will also arise, such as receiving a beating from demons and cannibals and the like. Some beginners fail to understand these visions as experiences of meditation and consider the Buddhas, demons, and cannibals and the like to be real. Through producing thoughts of hope and doubt, and through having failed to understand that these visions are to be brought into the path, the gaining of good qualities is obstructed. To prevent such misunderstanding, one should cut off all doubts and false assumptions of one's experience before they arise.
Okay, so this is like a warning. We're heading from this path to the diamond path, and things can get interesting. Visions can arise, which can be either Buddhas or saints or so-called positive experiences, or it can be horrible experiences of demons and cannibals that are going to, you know, beat you up and eat you. What is the warning here? What are they saying?
Don't take it seriously. Like, don't be scared by it. Understand that it's just an illusion. Like, it's a visual. It's
exactly.
A visual.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's right in the last sentence.
One exactly.
Cut off all doubts.
Mm-hmm.
And false assumptions of one's experience before they arise. So go into it with no doubt.
Mm.
Right.
It's like a bad trip on on acid, right?
I don't know.
Yes, here we are.
Yeah, it's a warning to
a warning.
Seal it. It's to seal it with emptiness. Remember,
don't
we talked about sealing with emptiness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If you have a vision, whether it's a Buddha or a demon,
don't,
it's empty. It's an illusion.
Oh.
Because
that's
the meditative experience of
yeah.
cleaning out your negativity
yeah.
can produce the arising of these appearances.
And that's what this is all is.
And whether they're good or bad, it's still an appearance.
It's still an appearance.
It's
an
appearance. And it's still empty, and you should not get...
Or you could say it's not real.
...excited about it, yeah. Or
and that's really where you began today, the teaching.
Oh. Yeah.
So these are metaphors, like these demons and stuff like that, are all demons of the crap we're cleaning, we're clearing out of our consciousness, and the deeper you go...
But the visions are there.
The
visions are
there.
You'll have the visions. You'll have the appearances.
But they're metaphors for
but you need to see the emptiness of it. You need to seal it.
This is what we're going to see in the bardo when we die, right?
No.
Well, that's another large topic.
That's a big topic, yeah.
But yeah, there are appearances too, but they're not caused by this. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so although the previously mentioned was not actually translated into Tibetan from Sanskrit, some excerpts, such as having turned the wheel of the cause dharma for anyone who desires the cause, are quoted in the Dispelling of the Two Extremes and in the great translator who is named Rinchen Zangpo. That text is called The Refutation of Wrongly Practiced Mantrayana. Although some scholars say that there are two different texts, it is said that the title of the Sanskrit text was translated into two different titles in Tibetan, although it's only one sutra. So this is kind of an aside about the translation part of it. To contemplate upon the meaning of this, though, one should think, when I enter into the profound path of the Vajrayana, I will gain inconceivable visions of experience of the path. Vision of experience. However, I should be neither happy when I experience agreeable visions, nor unhappy when I experience disagreeable ones, because all the various experiences of worldly existence, that is, samsara and liberation, nirvana, that arise, are simply due to the power of the mind interdependently related to one's veins, vein letters, element nectars, and essence of transcendental wisdom airs. Thus it is like this. So what does that mean? What it's saying is that when you get out of this perfection path and you get into the Vajrayana path, and the reason that it's esoteric is you're working with your energies and all these internal structures that we have in our what's called the Vajra body, not the physical body, but our energetic body. That's what the veins, the vein letters, the element nectars, and the essence of transcendental wisdom airs refers to. We have all these different energy systems that interact and interrelate, and when you get into Vajrayana, you work with those. The reason it's esoteric is they're very powerful. There's some danger if you don't do it right.
That's exactly right.
So when you start working with these, you can have these visions, these appearances arise from the working with these. But you shouldn't get caught up in it. You shouldn't think, you know, that's a real cannibal who's going to eat me. And by the way, this can happen not only when you're sitting on the cushion, but just when you're in your between session time too. So we're getting the sort of forewarning, but also the explanation about, well, why is this held secret?
Mm-hmm.
It's secret because you don't give matches to little kids to play with. That's the reason. Okay?
When you said veins, could it be like another synonym for, or like similar to, in Chinese medicine, they call it meridians?
Yes.
Or channels?
Okay, here we are in the terminology.
I'm just trying to understand what you're saying.
It's like that, but it's not the same system.
Okay, cool. That's fine.
Because it's an energetic body.
Yeah. Yeah, it's called the Vajra body.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. They're just making reference to it, but there's no teaching here because it's esoteric and you have to have the empowerment to receive the teaching itself and to even look at the text.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
Yes.
If all these experiences are summarized, they are subsumed into five threefold experiences whose total is therefore 15, and which are in turn subsumed into three transic absorptions. When those arise within me, I shall recognize them individually as this is the experience of body, this is the experience of mind, and so on, and remain indifferent.
Mm-hmm.
In brief, one should think, I shall enter into the path of the Vajrayana, the only path traversed by all the Buddhas. Having entered that path, I shall also practice until each experience arises upon my mind stream. Having practiced, I shall treat whatever experiences arise in accordance with the teaching. In other words, what we've just been saying, that it's an illusory appearance, it's not to be attached to. This description of arising appearances and experiences was referenced at the very, very, very beginning when Virupa was teaching Sutrayana during the day and practicing Vajrayana at night in secret in his room. Do you remember what happened?
Yes.
Do you remember with his mala,
yes.
The story?
Yes.
Somebody remember?
Yes.
What happened?
Well, he threw it into the toilet.
But why?
Because he thought he wasn't getting what he was expecting to get.
That's right.
He took the visions as something real, and so he just went,
yeah. Yeah, that's right. He had dreams that were very violent. Floods and destruction, and they were like nightmares.
Terrible.
He was having nightmares, and he unfortunately misinterpreted them and thought that it meant that he wasn't getting anywhere in his practice, and he was wasting his time. And so he said, well, I'm going back to Sutrayana, and he threw his mala. So that's an example of what can go sideways on you if you don't prepare for the visions and the dreams and the things that are coming. And I think, this is my opinion, I think that's why it's in the end of this section. Because you need to know that. Otherwise, you could do like Virupa.
Well, one would think you would have somebody guiding you through this process as well.
Yeah.
A teacher or a guru, so you would be on your own.
Yes, this is true, but very often in your meditation, Your guru may not be right there, right?
No, but
your dreams.
But they're always connected to
you.
They're
connected to your heart.
Anyways,
you bring them back.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
But poor Virupa
was doing it on his own.
On his own in private.
Yeah.
But
you want to get a good teacher.
But the teacher will not always be the solution. I mean, that's what the teacher says. When Trungpa, this I think is very pertinent. So when Trungpa was thinking of leaving Tibet, he asked all his great teachers, his main teachers, all the heads of the Kagyu lineage, and none of them had told him what to do. And I thought that was the most ballsy thing to do. Yeah. Obviously, you go, get out of there, you know?
Yeah.
But he says, I realized that they had invested so much in him that he has to find his own way out of it. The
but
teacher can't always be the pillow that you lend
him. Exactly. They were still giving him the answer by...
Yes.
He
said that sometimes the karuna or the spiritual friend is one who says, I can't give you the answer. If you don't have that, then you're going to be lost in a lot of weird stuff.
Yeah, you're not ready yet.
Okay, that concludes tonight's session. Next week will be the final session of this text. I invite you to come because there might be a surprise. Then there'll be a 2-week break. And on January 5th, we'll start a different teaching, which will be Parting from the Four Attachments. And the format of that class will be really different than this class. This class, we had one book and we followed it from cover to cover and wound our way through it. But this is 500 years old. But Parting from the Four Attachments is almost 1,000 years old. And that means that there have been many, many commentaries written by many, many saints and sages and gurus. And so there won't be one single text that'll be followed. There'll be a lot of them, and that's my job, to read all those and somehow put them all together in a coherent way. So there won't be an actual book that's followed, but there will be commentaries on various commentaries on the original Parting from the Four Attachments, which is only 4 lines, but it's the whole path. So it takes a lot of commentaries to understand that and go into it. So that'll be one difference in the next round. There won't be a single text. The other difference is, in this round, we've mostly done listening and contemplating. We've done very little actual meditation in this class. Mm-hmm. The next round, there'll be a lot more meditation. They'll be listening and contemplating, but we're going to actually have the practice, some practices in the class itself, meditative practices, short, guided meditations. And so there'll be a format difference in that, and that'll start on January 5th.
Great. Yeah.
But please come next week.
Okay.
For the final vision. Don't want to miss that. So now we get to do our dedication.
So nam de tam cha zi pa ni tok na me pe da nam pam je te ke ga na chi ba lu tu pe si pe so le do wa dro wa shu jang chu sen cho rin po che Ma ke panam ke yurchi ke manam par me pariam gong ne bong tu kao parsho jam pa po jitar kin padam kundu sang du de yang de shin te De da kungi jesu da lo chi Ye wa di da tam che ra tu nyo Tu so shek pi ya wa tam che ki Nyo wa gang wa jo tu nya pa gi Dak shen ge wa se wa di Sampo cho chir ratung yo wardi Chak sa wadang cho ching cha padang Jesu irang hu shing so wa yi Gir wa chung se ta ki chi sa ta Tam che so pe
By this merit, may all attain omniscience. May it defeat the enemy wrongdoing from the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death. From the ocean of samsara, may all beings be free. Bodhicitta is precious. May it arise in all beings in whom it has arisen. May it never decline where it has arisen. May it ever grow and flourish. In whatever way, valiant Manjushri and Samantabhadra know how to transfer merit, so do I dedicate all my own virtues that I might train to be like them. Through this dedication, praised as supreme by the victorious Buddhas of the past, present, and future, I, together with all sentient beings, dedicate these roots of virtue to attaining Buddhahood. May whatever little virtue I may have gained from prostrating, offering, confessing, rejoicing, requesting, and beseeching be dedicated to attaining perfect enlightenment.
Thank you.